This is the story about...
I want to do it too.
Okay.
One, two.
This is Precious Lives.
Stories about kids.
Teens.
Guns.
Guns.
And how we end the violence.
Bye-bye.
Because we are precious.
I'm Eric Vaughn. This is Precious Lives. This week, Precious Lives travels to Minneapolis. A decade ago, the city had a gun violence problem destroying the lives of young people, much like Milwaukee's. They knew something had to change. They decided to make a citywide plan, a blueprint for youth violence prevention. And since its inception, the city has seen significant drops in gun-related violence involving youth. Precious Lives producer Emily Foreman visited Minneapolis to find out how they did it and discovered a plan that hinges on deep and broad partnerships and collaboration.
KMOJ, Minneapolis-St. Paul, bringing unity to the community.
I started my trip in the heart of North Minneapolis, on West Broadway Avenue. People in Minneapolis often associate violent crime with the Broadway corridor. It looks a lot like the intersection of Fond du Lac and North Avenue in Milwaukee. If I plan to learn anything about what youth violence prevention looks and feels like, I needed to go where young people and violence intersect.
This neighborhood is calm most of the time. It's like everybody is friendly. They speak high and by, you know, the usual. But it could get violent quick and out of nowhere.
That's where I met 22-year-old Soldan Armstrong. He lives in the neighborhood, has for most of his life. When he was a toddler, his family moved from Chicago, where the homicide rate is much higher.
Like Minnesota, Minneapolis, yeah, has the potential of becoming as bad as Chicago if we let it. Like, okay, if the people that's positive in Minneapolis decided not to care anymore.
For example, the church across the street.
That church is out here a lot, throwing block parties. The cookie cart hires teens, so it's like stuff to do. And then the YMCA's down there. They come out in the community and reach out. So it's like, you see the help.
Amidst the vacant lots, partially due to a tornado that leveled homes a few years ago, Soldan sees the help. But his peers don't always know what's for them.
Most kids out here are just confused with nothing to do, like on the verge. Like, they didn't find the blueprint. Most of them don't know about the blueprint.
Soldan knows what it's like on the verge.
I was in and out the juvenile justice system since I was 13.
He's the oldest of four boys. He picked up a gun for the first time at 14.
I went to prison when I was 18.
He robbed a cab driver at gunpoint.
It was just me being loyal, I guess. Friends and family. If we hurting as a family, as a unit, then you need it right now. And the only way I know how to get it right now is if I rob somebody.
In prison, Soldan went through a restorative justice program. He wrote an apology letter to the cab driver.
Empathy is not a simple thing. And most of us do not see empathy at all. People in your immediate circle, your friends that you grew up on this block with, everybody outside of this, you shouldn't care for. When I found out about the word empathy, I just went back to my cell, and I thought about every possible person that I ever affected negative.
Soldan picked up a gun for the first time in 2007. Around the same time, Minneapolis's former mayor, R.T. Rybek, was reaching his breaking point. Kids were dying.
I stood at way too many murder scenes where someone would say, I knew that would happen. And my response was, why the hell didn't you do something?
R.T., as he likes to be called, started recruiting people who had ideas and perspectives to share.
I had to be comfortable as a leader in the community with a title to sit at a collective table and honestly listen and honestly be willing to give up part of my rank and stature for the larger good.
He persevered through the criticisms.
I had to own the failure of the present. So I had to be very comfortable with repeated criticism of things that I was directly responsible for.
Over the course of a year, he'd built a coalition of government agencies, nonprofits, grassroots groups, key leaders from neighborhoods, churches.
We recognized something that I still feel today, which is almost all of the good work in youth violence prevention falls into four key categories.
One, connect every young person with a trusted adult. Two, intervene at the first sign of at-risk behavior. Three, rejuvenate kids. Don't throw them away. And four, attack the culture of violence.
Those 4 points we held up to our community and mapped everybody who was doing anything in those areas and then looked at gaps.
And then redirect resources to the programs that work to bring them to scale. In 2008, the team unveiled their plan, the Blueprint for Action to Prevent Youth Violence. And it's working. During the last 9 years, Minneapolis has seen far more dramatic decreases in youth violence than Milwaukee. Of course, Minneapolis has fewer people, less poverty, and a smaller minority population. But the numbers are still striking. Non-fatal shootings involving youth have dropped 72%, compared with 29% in Milwaukee over the same period. Sultan got out of prison last summer, ready to make a change. He couldn't get a job with a felony on his record. He spent most of his time trying to make amends for his past by helping young people.
I used to go to parks every day, and I would get 3-on-3 games going, organizing kids, and I was giving back. It was not hurting anybody.
That's when he first encountered the Blueprint team, at a pop-up park. Most days throughout the summer, the city hosts temporary mini-parks. Sometimes they choose a vacant lot, sometimes an intersection, places where there's a lot of crime or places where they know they can reach youth.
But I showed up to one not even knowing about pop-up parks. I was playing basketball with the kids.
A woman walked up to Sultan at the pop-up park and asked if he wanted to be a part of BUILD. BUILD stands for Broader Urban Involvement and Leadership Development. It's a paid program for young leaders who can effectively reach young people and deter them from gangs and crime. Sultan had the resume.
I was out of work. I didn't have a job at all. So I'm like, yeah.
He worked 10 hours a week for $10 an hour. It's a year-long program that Sultan recently completed. It might seem small, but these programs represent collaborative efforts that drive the larger Blueprint goals.
Hey, Sasha.
Sasha Cotton is the person who keeps them on track. She's the Youth Violence Prevention Coordinator, a position in the city's health department. Sasha meets us at Breaking Bread on Broadway. The restaurant just opened. It's one of 2 sit-down restaurants in the neighborhood that offers something other than fast food. She's wearing solid colors and clean lines, hair pulled back. She's ready for any meeting.
So this is just for your, your official background check could be good. It's just an employment verification document.
Sasha meets with Sultan weekly to get his take on how they're doing. As of today, he's on payroll as a youth violence consultant.
It'd be interesting to get your input, like, what were the circumstances going on that allowed a young person, 16 years old, 18 years old, to no longer be here?
I'm here right after the 4th of July. Like Milwaukee, Minneapolis also experienced a violent Independence Day weekend. At least 10 people were shot, and one person, a 16-year-old boy, died.
What do you think the community needs when something like that happens from youth violence prevention?
We can have a big conversation, block a street off, and just have a big old circle in the middle of the street. Have people talk about how they feel about black people killing each other. But I don't think it should be in a building. Like, no comments. Why? Because it's inviting the community. If you walk in a building, you can't see this big circle of people talking about a recent murder that just happened.
Yeah, that would work.
Because when the police kill somebody like that, they shut off whole blocks and they riot and they do all type of stuff like that.
That's totally not productive, right?
Right.
Like,
Sultan leaves for his other job. He does canvassing and community organizing for NOC, or Neighbors Organizing for Change. I stay, and Sasha offers to drive me around Minneapolis.
I should almost take you to South Minneapolis. Do you have time to go to South Minneapolis?
The north side is predominantly African American and has the highest concentration of victims and perpetrators of violence. The south side is different.
It's a new set of problems. You know, you think you have how you deal with your gang problem figured out, and then you get like, oh no, this is the cartel. That's a totally different kind of gang or organized crime than like Crips or Clicks.
The South Side is a mix of Native American, Latino, and Somali community.
Because the Native community has been here for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And the Somali community is a relatively new community.
There's a Somali consultant on the team working on best practices for helping Somali youth with violence prevention.
Because I think sometimes you hear people and you think you understand what they are saying they want, but when we put it in a cultural lens, the way that we're going about it isn't solving the problem. And so,
we wrap up our tour and head downtown for what they call a multi-jurisdictional team meeting. Sasha leads these twice a month. Representatives come from public schools, police, juvenile corrections, employment offices, the mayor's office, parks, transportation, and nonprofit organizations.
I mean, we had a very interesting conversation again with Sultan this morning.
She brings up his idea that the community should have a visible, open dialogue about the recent shootings.
Then people don't know what's going on. But if we do,
people around the table nod their head in agreement. One of the police officers speaks up about community meetings.
I was at where they just yelled at me for like an hour to 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
And then afterwards, they come up and hug you. I can't believe you took it.
Right.
You know, yeah. I can't believe you took it. You and didn't leave.
And I think and that's I'm important. Like, that might be the best medicine for your community.
And so I think that there's legitimate things that could happen in a dialogue like that when the community is already riled up after a homicide. I think it has to be done with a lot of attention to detail, and that it would require many of the partners around this table to pull something like that off in a way that is healing and not hurtful.
Involving young people in the conversation has been a part of the process since the early days of the blueprint.
Young people who were in jail, young people who were just members of the community, and those interactions really embedded themselves in our minds and became our stories, too.
That's Sasha's boss, the Commissioner of Health, Gretchen Musikant.
That bringing together of people who are not usually together in that planning process was really essential and powerful.
And what did the group want? They wanted the city to declare gun violence a public health issue.
But I don't believe I had ever had the community begging for something to be a public health issue and to be ready to, like, hold up signs saying, yes, this is a public health issue. And so, I had asked myself the same question. Why are they so excited about it being a public health issue?
Because it changes the narrative.
Instead of it being a narrative that's only about bad people and police controlling, you can bring together the things about parenting or opportunities for young people, all the different factors that the community sees and feels.
The city council even passed a resolution declaring youth violence prevention as a public health issue in Minneapolis. I met back up with Soldan after he finished his work.
Hey, get the ball, dude. We're finna go hoop.
I give him and a few friends a ride to the basketball court. We talk about Soldan's new consulting job. Where Soldan's from, I mean, in his neighborhood, they don't often trust city officials.
They don't at all.
They don't at all.
I grew up not trusting the government.
That's Malik. He's like a mirror of who Soldan was at 17.
Either the government's trying to take your kids away from you,
or they want your money, or...
Like, seeing them raid my grandma's house, putting everybody on the floor, beating my uncles up, stumping everybody, putting holes in the wall, made me feel like, how could y'all just come in our house and just violate everything possible?
Sasha will rely on Soldan to facilitate police youth dialogues in the coming months. At first, he was reluctant.
Since I've got to meet him on different levels and I got to feel as an equal, like, I feel as important in the meeting with these big people.
Because they're listening.
Yes, they're listening to my ideas. They're listening to what I got to say. I feel like I can make a change and I can bridge that gap between my people and the officers.
It's going to be hard.
It is going to be hard, but I feel like I'm the right person to get it started.
He got a way more positive attitude than the rest of us.
This is the most, I would say, stable I've been, and not worry about where I'm going to eat at, where I'm going to sleep at.
I can see how the city's belief in Soldan has changed him. He's recently enrolled in college. He's starting in the fall.
Life is still a struggle. It is getting better. I feel because of the people I know, like Sasha and the mayor.
He's talking about the current mayor.
They have offered me a lot of opportunities to see the world differently. And I know that I'm fighting for a good cause, but I feel like it's not coming fast enough sometimes.
We walk towards the basketball court. Malik's a few paces ahead, headphones half in, pretending not to listen.
I am trying to be this man's mentor. You. Low-key, he don't even know it, because I don't label myself as a mentor. I'm just equal, and that's what helped.
You're hearing this, right?
So he's like the only positive thing I got going in my ear now.
Through Soldan, Malik begins to realize there's more for him at his fingertips than he thought. And Sasha depends on people like Malik to help shape the plan.
I think what I've been spending a good chunk of my time doing over the last almost 2 years is really trying to transition us from a plan that's focused solely on systems change and really taking it to the community and trying to make sure that the community feels not only do they feel invested themselves, but that they can see the investment from the city, right? That, like, there are full-time people whose whole job is to think about how to keep your kids safe.
That's the official Minneapolis Blueprint for Action to Prevent Youth Violence song. You can find a link to the full track and the blueprint on our website, preciouslivesproject.org. Precious Lives is produced by 371 Productions in association with WUWM, WNOV, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. We're supported by the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and the Isabel and Alfred Bader Fund. Music by Kieran V of Fresh Cut Collective.